Oh, welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, I am chatting with Lobo Tigre. He is the founder and editor of The Independent Speculator. And Lobo, it's been a couple months, actually, since I had you back on the show, which actually gives us a lot to talk about when it comes to the precious metals complex, as we have gold continuing to break higher. It's put in a couple legs higher over the last about 3 to 4 months. And even interestingly, late last night when the markets opened, gold popped to another about 6-year high, right around that 1550 level. It has given up a bit of those gains, but still overall gold trading at about 1526, 1527. Let's start with gold in the formation, how it hasn't really had a natural correction during this uptrend. What do you think about how gold has been reacting and how it just keeps on stair-stepping higher?
Yeah, well, first, it's great to be back on the show. I'm not sure exactly how our schedules got discombobulated, but it does make things fresh. Not just say, oh, yeah, well, like Lee said last month. So it is good to be here with you, Corey. And, of course, a very interesting time. I think the last time we spoke, we hadn't had the 1400 breakout yet, and now we have the 1500 breakout, so even better. There are lots of things that we could say about this, but I want to pick up on the last point you made first. I just published an article today, which your audience might want to go to. It'll be the very first thing, first article on independentspeculator.com on the homepage there. And it's called Gold Wants to Go Higher. Are you ready? And my reason for saying that is that I've had this feeling, and okay, I'm not Doug Casey yet. Don't have quite that many years here. But I'm starting to develop my own sense for the markets. I have been doing this for 15 years. And, you know, for a while, it's just watching the daily fluctuations, which they're just daily fluctuations. But the sum of them has given me this feeling that, you know, gold wants to go higher. And looking at the chart after the last break above 1500, it became clear to me what it was about the data that was making me feel this way. And then, as usually, when you see a fluctuation upwards under most circumstances, you know, there's a break upwards, and then a market will retest recent lows. Like, if things haven't really changed, if it's just a fluctuation, then you'll come back to where you were before. But even if things, you know, might over time head higher, people will second guess. People will think that the upward breakout is just temporary, so people will sell, and the price of whatever the asset is, not just gold, will retest recent lows. And we haven't seen that since, you know, the first significant break up toward the high 1300s. Instead of testing recent lows, the market kept poking higher than, you know, its last peak, right, or mini peak, if you will. And then it broke above 1400. And then we saw the same pattern, where instead of retesting the recent lows down to 1670 or 1660 or whatever, it kept testing the recent highs until it broke again, and then 1450 and 50. We keep seeing this pattern where you mentioned this stair step, but if you look at those stairs, they're not flat. They're sloping upwards. You can see this on the chart I published in today's article. Instead of a flat line for each one of these shoulders on the way up, which is why I don't think head and shoulders pattern, you see this upward slope, and then it breaks out to the upside. That's, in my mind, extremely bullish, and it's a visual way of qualifying what I'm saying when I say that it feels like the market wants to head higher. I'm very excited about this, and the breakout we had last night, you know, well north of even of 1550, depending on which contract you look at, was very significant. Okay, it's given it back today. Trump has said some calming things, but, you know, who knows what he'll tweet tomorrow or tonight even. I think that pattern remains intact, so I'm really quite excited. And the best of it all is, let's say I'm wrong, right? And that this, you know, gold's gone too high too fast, and it's due for a breather, some consolidation before heading higher. Well, I don't think that changes the overall narrative. You know, the Fed has thrown the dollar under the bus. That's clear. The bond market, at least, is telling us there's pretty much 100% chance we're going to get more easy money. And so that's bullish for gold. So that narrative hasn't changed. And if we get a consolidation phase, that'll give the people who were caught off guard and people who didn't believe in the gold breakout a chance to buy in on maybe some great stocks that they missed out on. I know there's some on my shopping list that I'm actually hoping I'm wrong. I'm hoping we get more of a correction because there are some great companies out there that I'd love a chance to buy cheaper than I can get them today.
All right, let's dive down a little bit into what has been driving this breakout. You even mentioned how the Fed, you say, has thrown the dollar under the bus. More so, I think they've become so reactive to trade wars and market volatility that, yes, they did cut rates once and the market is pricing in, I think, 2 or 3 more rate cuts. Those expectations do swing, but fact of the matter is it seems like we are in a rate cutting cycle. That's obviously good for gold. Lower interest rates, good for gold. But then there's also this fear trade that has come in on the back of trade worries. But in all fairness, fear trades too, they can dissipate if there is progress made on the trade war. I don't need your comments on the status of this trade war, but what do you see, or what do you take note of when you see an environment where fear really is a major driver for the gold price?
Well, I think the most important thing to take away is probably no surprise for your audience. They've been listening to us, they've been listening to other speakers, a lot of knowledgeable people on the precious metals markets. And that is that, you know, gold and silver are precious metals. They're not just expensive metals, or, you know, they're not just pricey, interesting baubles or whatever, despite what Warren Buffett may say. They are precious, and more specifically, they are monetary metals. They are metals that have been used for thousands of years as money. You know, the word for money in Spanish and many other languages is silver. And gold has been the way to safeguard wealth for thousands of years. So, you know, when fear drives the precious metals upwards, you know, that shouldn't surprise anybody. It's been doing it for thousands of years. But it confirms that, no, Bitcoin has not changed anything. Bitcoin is not the new gold. And I'm not anti-Bitcoin, by the way. I'm just saying it's not gold. It's not something you can hold in your hand. That, you know, it's a physical, you know, physical wealth that has value in and of itself. And it's a very different beast. So no, Bitcoin hasn't eaten gold's lunch. No, silver is not just an industrial metal anymore. You can see silver now confirming the gold breakout, unlike platinum and palladium, which were never monetary metals, but silver was. So in my mind, what we're seeing and the way the fear trade is driving the precious metals, it should be very reassuring to your audience, because it's basically telling them what they already know, which isn't new, but it's also telling them that all these claims that things are different now, gold is a thing of the past and so on, that's not true.
Yeah, very true. Gold does come back onto a lot of people's radar when fears and economic worries, which, you know what, the U.S. had kind of weathered that storm, but they are very much creeping into traders' heads here. You mentioned silver a lot, and one of the arguments when gold started to break out was that silver was still lagging. But over the last about 3 weeks, it's been very interesting to see silver on really slow news weeks start to play that catch up. Even today, silver is outperforming gold as gold has pulled back and given up some of those gains. Are you seeing more of an opportunity in silver stocks then, because it was slow to move? And in all fairness, there are far fewer silver stocks than gold stocks out there.
Sure. All of the above. Absolutely agree. But more to the point, gold is hitting six-year highs, new six-year highs with each one of these step-outs. Silver is accelerating and catching up with gold. And a lot of these updates, you'll see silver on a percentage gain basis doing better than gold. But don't forget that silver was hammered down much harder than gold. So it's recovering from a lower base. And it's not making new six-year highs. I'm not sure it's even making new two-year highs. Right? It still has such a long way to go to really achieve what gold has already achieved in this breakout. Silver would have to be a good $21, maybe $22. So it's a long way to go. And there are a lot of marginal silver producers that are ecstatic to have $17 silver that'll be making a lot of money. Again, on a percentage basis, the change for these businesses that were just barely surviving or you know, eating away their savings at $15-16, you know, it's an enormous change for them, and that should have very positive implications for those share prices. But so the good news here is not just that there's more oomph in silver for being more volatile. The good news is that it's still much closer to its lows. It has not broken out yet to, you know, the kind of six-year highs that gold has. And so I do see, you know, great upside in both, but on a percentage gain basis, I see more upside in silver right now. And it's very much my area of focus. I'm looking for quality silver plays to deploy cash in right now. As I said earlier, hopefully on a bit of a retreat. But if not, it's still my number one focus right now is great silver plays.
Okay. And still keeping with almost that buy the dip mentality if we do get those dips. But can you share with us any silver or even gold stocks that are catching your eye that you think investors should take notice of?
Well, it's not my business to make recommendations. And of course, the core of my flagship letter is a portfolio of where I put my own money. So I hope your audience will forgive me if I don't give that away. But there is one that maybe I sold too soon and it's out in the public. You can see on the bottom of any of my web pages, there's a track record link and you can see the closed positions that I've had since launching the Independent Speculator. And one of those companies is Silvercrest, which is a, you know, I wish it was in my portfolio today. It keeps doing well, but it did so well so quickly. I had such a quick win and there was the scare about this populist leftist president in Mexico, AMLO, coming in. So between the stock having risen so much and the increased political risk, I just decided to take the win. You know, in hindsight, I could wish I hadn't, but you know, a win's a win. So I'm not complaining. Anyway, it frees me to say, what a spectacular success story this is. I mean, it was a great idea on principle in that you had the same team that discovered and developed, built, and sold the Santa Elena mine, the First Majestic, you know, a big win for shareholders, doing essentially the same thing in the same geology, right? It's not, you know, some lithium guy suddenly becoming a uranium expert or whatever the flavor of the day is. It's people doing the same thing they did before, but they've just had a much better success. The Santa Elena became really First Majestic's best silver mine, if you ask me. Big source of profit for them. And they have found something bigger and better, and they're advancing it very rapidly, multiple drill rigs turning and super high grades. It's just there's so few big high-grade silver deposits. This ranks up there with Escobal and some of the others, but it's in a much less risky political jurisdiction, that being Mexico. It's still not perfect. You know, there is political risk everywhere. But I really like Silvercrest. And you look at that stock chart, and the only thing I could say that's wrong with this company, if you want to say that, is that it's not cheap. The stock has done spectacularly well. But this is clearly a mine in the making. It's a high profit, high margin mine with really consistent high grade mineralization, just spectacular grades. And they keep discovering more. So I can't say it's cheap now. And by the way, I asked management this question. I have a series of interviews on the website called In the Pit, where I drag CEOs into the pit for tough questions. And I asked Eric Fier, the CIA, says, you know, Your market cap's more than your net present value for your project. Why should people buy this stock? And why are you not overvalued? And he made the case for a lot more high-grade silver coming. So it's not a stock I own right now. It is a stock that I have close familiarity with. I've been on the property twice. And I'm not recommending people run out and buy it because it's hard for me to say that when the price has gone up so much. But it's a spectacular silver discovery. It's certainly one that on a dip or when they get closer to production decision, I would look at closely again. I would be happy to have that stock in my portfolio now.
Okay. Yeah, Silvercrest just continues to deliver high grade, good drill results, and they're a team that has done it before. So that stock, yeah, just keeps on moving higher and higher. When it comes to gold stocks, if you don't want to maybe share some of your particular positions, can you give us an insight on what you're looking for in some of these gold stocks? Simply because it has been a selective run. Some of the bigger stocks, some of the royalty companies, they were all moving first. And a few of the exploration stories are moving, but you can make the argument that a lot of those were already moving before gold started to break out. So where's the sweet spot now for investors?
Yeah, as a sort of matter of principle, I think there are a couple areas that I can share without giving too much away here, and it's certainly what I'm doing. So I'll tell you what I'm doing. What I like is the pre-production sweet spot. You and I have talked about that before. You know, they used to call it the golden runway back in my previous employment. That time period where a company makes a transition from being an explorer burning cash to being a producer making money is highly material for companies. And the odds of success in that space turn out to be much better than conventional wisdom ever imagined. So for companies that I think have, you know, good projects that will become high margin mines, I'm very keen on that. And there are some good ones in that space today, which people are welcome to do their own due diligence on. But I think that's a higher probability of substantial gains than just about anything else you can do in the resource sector. Exploration, of course, is famous for being the place for 10 baggers and you know, where you can make the biggest wins. But of course, there's higher risk in that. So my preference is what I call success in progress. Like, I don't just want to back any old exploration play, even if it's great people that I like a lot who've been successful before. You know, even some of the best teams in the world, they can go through a very long dry spell where nothing happens and you face dilution and it's just terrible. But when somebody's made a discovery that clearly has merit, like SilverCrest a year or two ago, right? And before, you know, now it's advancing more towards the production decision stage. But a year or two ago, they were just putting out press release after press release of consistent high-grade results. Just boom, boom, boom. Every time it came out, fantastic. You know, a story like that is what I call success in progress. They clearly have something of merit, and there's clearly a lot more upside. You know, yes, it's not as cheap as it would have been if I had bought it, you know, before they had anything. But before they had anything, they'd be like any of the thousands of others who don't have anything. And the risk is enormous. So I like reducing risk and still holding on to substantial gains. Those are two areas that I favor.
All right, Lobo, we're going to wrap it up there. Great having you back on the show. We're going to get on a more consistent schedule. And you know what? Hopefully we just keep on having more and more positive stuff to talk about, especially when it comes to the precious metals. But I know even in your newsletter, you cover a wide range of metals and investment opportunities. So I will post a link below this interview. Everyone, go over, visit Lobo's site, independentspeculator.com, and at the very least, sign up for his free email list. Lobo, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Corey.